Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, West Coast, can they still make the top two? Frio, where to now? And will big Maxi Gawn win the Brownlow?
That was out of bounds! I don't believe it! I see it, but I don't believe it!
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is...
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello Tuesday, which means it's time for the first edition this week of the Duff and Quarters podcast. Glenn Quatermain, the very happy Hawthorne supporting editor of the Sunday Times.
Only just.
With me in the studio, Mark Duffield, I am. The chief football writer of the West Australian. We are brought to you by Tab Touch.
The not so happy.
The not so happy Fremantle supporting chief football writer of the West Australian newspaper. Quarters, how are you? What did you make of the weekend? Melbourne, the highlight for me.
Mate, the flags are at half mast at every snowfield in Victoria and New South Wales. The condos are empty. The Range Rovers are in for a service. The only people who are happy are the Range Rover mechanics, mate, because they're all in for a service. They're up on the blocks. The chains are off. Let's get it on. Monty, let's get that 1979 port out.
Monty and Belvedere, they'll be on level four at the MCG.
Let's crack open that tawny port, I tell you. Terrific win by Melbourne. Before we get into Frio, we should acknowledge them. And not a bad effort by West Coast, actually. They were jumped early and came back. It was an amazing game of footy. And well done to Melbourne. Needed to beat a side above them on the ladder. They certainly did that. They're going to play finals. Really interesting to see, Duff, whether the monkey is off the back and they can just unshackle and cause some real damage in September, Melbourne. I think they can.
Yeah, it could go either way, couldn't it? They could get stage fright and bow out pretty quickly because they're not going to, barring a series of upsets this weekend, they won't play top four, so they won't get the double chance. So they're going to have one crack at it. And I suspect they'll beat GWS this week, so I suspect they'll host a final.
I suspect GWS will barely have a player on the park, so they should beat GWS this week.
If you're GWS, do you take the risk of more injury, or do you do?
Yes.
Trying to win this and host a final.
But unfortunately for GWS, I would be absolutely shocked if Phil Davis plays. That was just one of the bravest things I've seen in a decade, that his performance last weekend. Whacked early, stayed on the ground for numbers and rotations, and still put his body on the line. People who bag footballers should watch the replay of his game, because that was an extraordinary effort. And GWS just needs a win. They have to win. So yeah, I think they have to roll the dice now.
I've only watched Max Gawn play live a handful of times because Melbourne, obviously the games I tend to go east for are the finals, and Melbourne haven't been playing them for 12 years. How impressive is he as a ruckman? He plays strongly in the air. He can tap the ball at his feet. He can clear it wide of the stoppage. He takes marks around the ground. He plays well beneath his knees for a bloke of his size. And he runs tirelessly. I think he's an awesome footballer.
What you're saying is he's the complete package as a ruckman, and I think he is.
And he would be a worthy Brownlow medalist.
He would be. And so, look, I think this year is the year that we've had, I think Grundy and Gawn, they'd be in the top five, certainly top 10, if not best five players in the comp at the moment, in my opinion. And they're so important to their team. Both of those players, obviously Gawn, I think, would be ahead of him, Grundy, now, but they would be worthy Brownlow medalists. I think this is the year it is possible. Despite the accumulator, Tom Mitchell and other great... Clayton Oliver may take votes off Gawn as well. Mm. He's a terrific player too. So we saw him impressive again at the weekend with several others. So, Gawn is just great to watch. Great to watch. And I just love him off the field. He's just a ripper.
Well, everywhere. I mean, his demeanour everywhere is just...
Did you hear his comment about his finals experience?
Yeah, under 13s or something.
Yeah, well, I have. To be fair, he said, I have played under 13 in an under 13s basketball grand final.
And got an award for best player, too.
Exactly.
So he stands up in the big games.
Well, he does. And I think I've got a feeling that Melbourne's going to cause a bit of damage in this final series. I reckon the monkey's off to an extent. They've made the finals. Yes, if they just went out, they don't want to go out meekly, but I think they've made their statement this year. They had to make finals, they have, and now I reckon it's look out.
So Belvedere and Monty are back from the snowfields. That's where the monkey is. He's off the back and he's up
well,
there
he's hidden up there somewhere, mate. He's frolicking in the
Mount
snow.
Mount Buller.
Frolicking in whatever snow there is left. Oh, no, he'd be more of a Hotham monkey, I think.
Oh, he'd be a Hotham Buller, monkey.
Buller's for more the, you know, the standard types, mate. You've Hotham up there, Mount Higginbottom. They'll be at a chalet there somewhere.
Okay. Great footage by video of David Schwartz in his lounge room with his son as Dean Kent lined up for the 50-metre shot on goal that put the D's two goals in front with about 2 minutes left. The sheer joy on their face and the apprehension as Dean Kent was running in. I have to say, if I was a Melbourne fan, there are others I would have preferred to take that kick than Dean Kent, but he slotted the goal. And the absolute unbridled joy they show, I think, just says a lot about AFL football.
This is a 12-year finals drought. It's not that long, really, in the scheme of things. And we saw the joy when the Western Bulldogs broke their drought, and we saw that unbelievable hysteria last year when Richmond broke their drought. What's it going to be if Melbourne win the flag this year? I mean, it's great to see you. At the moment, you either
lock up your Grange hermitage.
Exactly. The moment you either are a Melbourne supporter or you certainly know one. Haven't they come from nowhere?
Correct. Okay, so let's talk about what it means for West Coast. They have to beat Brisbane at the Gabba on Sunday to secure a second spot.
And I think they can.
Yeah, well, they should. Yeah, I mean, they'll start favourites in that game. There'll be no Josh Kennedy. Adam Simpson has already ruled him out. Obviously, Gaff and Nat Nui gone for the rest of the season. Simpson last night seemed pretty optimistic that Jack Darling recovers from his concussion in time to play. If they were to go there without Kennedy and Darling, I think it would become almost a 50-50 game.
Yeah, I'd still give him above 50% chance of winning that one. It's obviously a tough place to win now. Brisbane's playing good football. I think the real shame, what the loss really means is that I think there's a few sore West Coast boys. And yes, they do have the break the week after, but I reckon they would have loved to have won last weekend and just put a few of them in cotton wool for a couple of weeks. Yo, particularly Shuey, they're just sore boys at the moment. And That was the real pity for West Coast of last week's loss. They didn't win. It's not the end of the world. They can win this week, and it's top two, and they still get a break. So, you know, in many ways, maybe it's not, in hindsight, it might be a bad loss. It was, as I said, I thought they looked like Melbourne had every answer, but I thought West Coast showed a bit just to hang in there, even though it was their home ground. But Melbourne had a hell of a lot to play for.
You know what West Coast are? They're very efficient.
Mm.
And that means that when they get their opportunities, they're a good chance to take them. So Melbourne, in many respects, were dominant on the weekend. You know, they dominated clearance. They dominated inside 50s. They dominated contested possession. All of those things went very much Melbourne's way. But West Coast, by dint of the fact that when they get the ball, they use the ball and they tend to score and they tend not to miss scoring opportunities, they put themselves in most games. Dare I say it, quarters, they're a bit Hawthorn-esque.
Yes, they are. And Melbourne, as you've mentioned, very much were a little bit the opposite. They were 10 points up at quarter time, probably should have been 20-plus up at quarter time, I reckon, given their dominance. And you're right, you know, where opposition teams, particularly at Optus Stadium, require repeat forward entries to register, the Eagles tend to get the job done, and they do use the ball very well, which will help them in the finals. And I'll tell you what will help Melbourne in the finals, that contested brand they play.
Absolutely.
Contested brand football goes a long way in finals, and I reckon that's what will augur well for Melbourne.
And I'll tell you what else will help them, the experience of playing in front of a hostile 55,000 crowd roaring its lungs out.
Yep.
They're roaring their lungs out because they didn't get their 2-1 free kick advantage.
I saw that. Yes, I did see that.
It was only 18-14.
Oh, dear.
They weren't happy.
Oh, dear. Well, maybe.
And it was 3-6 at quarter time. You should have heard them at quarter time.
It
was oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear at quarter time.
I take it the umpires weren't cheered off the ground either.
They weren't? No. They were drowned in the Swan River, I think.
Or that little moat out the front.
Yes. Yeah. So, a question for you.
Yep.
Max Gawn comes here, dominates the ruck against Lysette and Vardy. What implications do you think that has for Scotty Lysette in terms of his contract talks with West Coast? I'm getting the feeling that he is less and less likely to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting the feeling that one of the reasons he's less likely to stay is because the club is still making up its mind
on him.
About him. And I think there are other clubs who are convinced that he will make them a better team. I think Port Adelaide is one of them. And I think if you look for a most likely destination for Scott Lysett at the moment, it's probably Port Adelaide.
Well, I think it would be a devastating blow if the Eagles lost Lysett. I would be very surprised if they don't up the ante. He's still got this week and a final series to prove his worth. So, yes, he did have his colours lowered at the weekend.
To a very good player.
By one of the great ruckmen of the current era, if not the. So there's no real shame in that. I still think Scotty Lysett's got a future at West Coast. I'd be very shocked if they aren't going to go harder even still at him. And I'd be even more shocked if Geelong don't pull something out, if they're not already behind the scenes and have a crack at Scott Lysett, because they need Scott Lysett as well. Eagles couldn't afford to lose him.
Yeah, okay. I reckon Scott Lysett's performance in the finals is going to be a big career-defining final series.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, but I still...
He's probably going to run into Grundy, and he's a chance to run into Gawn at some point in this final. He's probably got Steph Martin this week in Brisbane, who's no slouch either. So, yeah, I think it's a big 4 or 5 weeks for Scotty Lysett.
Well, it's a big 4 or 5 weeks for everyone, Duff. It's a final series, and all going well for them, they're going to be second on the ladder.
Okay, let's move on to the other West Australian team, Fremantle quarters.
At quarter time, I was actually commenting, they're going really well here, and I was impressed with Cox's game. Tabana was getting plenty of the footy, or not making the most of it, but plenty of it. And they look really good at quarter time, really good.
So what happened? Because I missed the first quarter. I was picking someone up from the airport.
Well, if you watch the rest of it, you missed it anyway. I think we all know what happened. There were 23 unanswered goals. But, you know, the really concerning thing to me, Duff, was how do you kick... 0-5 to 23-9 after quarter time, and you're still well behind in the tackle count. If you look at the overall picture, you can look at the glass half full. Let's look at the glass half full with Freo. Let's look at what they've done this year. They've won 8 games. They've won them in more convincing fashion that they were able to win their games last year. They've bedded down, I reckon, a defence that will hold them in good stead in the future. And their midfield looks in reasonably good shape coming up from underneath. What worries me about them is their forward line. And I know their forward line and the skill error we'll get onto in a minute, no doubt, the skill level, because that is something they will have to address. If you look at the glass half empty, it's just... The losses are out. They're averaging, 10 goals plus this year? And it's more...
Well, having won by 133 points doesn't help.
But before that, the away losses were really bad. If they had lost that game by 4 or 5 goals and then had a reasonable effort this week, you know, I reckon that's a good season. I'm not saying there's not been some good things done this year. But when you lose by 133 points in that manner... I reckon you get the alarm bells and the red flags going up, because it was a meek capitulation. It's the most embarrassing performance I've seen from a Fremantle team. And I know, as he does, he's a leader. Nat Fyfe comes out and says he's been in bigger holes. Well, I'm not sure if he has, to be honest, because that was a matzo ball hanging out at the weekend. And, it doesn't help either, Duff, when your coach comes out afterwards and there's... I think he just needs to start showing a bit of humility post-match, because there's a hell of a lot of discontent out there.
Absolutely.
Fremantle supporters have every right after that performance at the weekend. What Ross Lyon and Fremantle and the players have to understand is these Freo supporters all go back to their workplace and stuff, and they cop it just as much, don't worry. And that was embarrassing. And I just think that is not something you can sweep under the carpet and say it's an isolated game. Yes, other teams have gone down there, and it was really interesting to see a few sort of, I guess, back Ross yesterday.
Based on their own
performances. Paul Roos being one. His last game at Kardinia Park was a 110-point loss. Mm. I think we saw Richmond cop a 100-point loss in 2016, a year before they won the flag. So you can cop 100-point losses. It does happen. But the way that rolled on, it was just after quarter two, there was a real disconnect, and I think a real concerning lack of effort from my point of view, from where I saw it. So,
I'll put a different spin on that.
Yep.
I think effort dies when people realise they don't have the skill to compete.
Why should it?
Because you just give up.
Yeah, I played in sides as a kid where you were getting flogged every week. I don't think you ever give up or ever should give up.
Well, there's giving up and there's giving up. There's giving up as in not trying at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's giving up as in your effort threshold drops below a level where you just can't compete. You look at the stats out of that game. Fremantle were -5 in contested possession. They actually broke even at stoppages overall. I think the centre clearances would have gone Geelong's way.
Uncontested possession was obviously just
uncontested
horrific.
Possession was horrific,
yeah.
And that cuts to run, spread and work rate. But it also cuts to skill. And what happens if you cannot be confident in your ability to kick the ball, handball the ball, handle the ball cleanly and retain possession, you will stop running to spread to attack because you will be worried about your need to defend. And when you turn the ball over and the other team does not believe you can hurt them on the counter-attack or on the turnover, they will attack you fearlessly. And that's what Geelong were doing by the end of the game against Fremantle. They were simply running to attack because they knew they didn't have to defend. And that comes back to skill level. I only watched two teams train, West Coast and Fremantle. And I've seen Adam Simpson shift West Coast skill level dramatically in his time at the club. And I do not see Fremantle drill skill the way West Coast do. I do not see it.
So how do they address it?
They've got to start. You get good at what you value. It's as simple as that. You get good at what you value.
So for starters, it's a draft situation. It's no project players. It's skill, skill, skill.
Well, yeah, I think the player that comes in at the draft has to be a skilled player. But he should be if he's a top 10 player.
Well, exactly. That's my point.
But, mate, if Roger Federer stops practicing his cross-court forehand, sooner or later, Roger Federer starts missing his cross-court forehand.
He'll still get it past me. But I think there's still innate talent and there's still a talent base there.
I do not see them drill, measure and police skill at training like I see West Coast do.
Yep.
And if you don't do it, and this is elite sport we're talking about, so I don't want to hear messages from the coaches, you know, I coach effort or you judge them on effort. No, this is the toughest sporting competition in Australia. This is the pointy end of elite sport in Australia. Effort alone is not enough. And what's more, even if you are an effort-based club, where is your effort to improve your skill level? Where is that effort?
Well, that happens in the lead-up, that happens in the pre-season, that happens in every waking moment. You have a footy in your hands, like most kids do, you know.
I'm not one of these people that's calling for Ross Lyon's head, because A, he's got a 2-year contract.
Yeah.
And trying to get a person out of a 2-year contract is just so problematic these days.
So are you a person, however, is calling for a review of the way things... Well, clearly you are, because you want things to change. You want
I want their football program to change.
Yeah.
I want Ross to realise that what he did that gave him a competitive advantage over the competition between 2009 and 2015, it is gone. Every club now.
So we're talking about a defensive mechanism.
Every club now has the elite defensive mechanisms that Ross Lyon pioneered between 2009 and 2015. He took the game to a different place, and kudos to him for that. Alistair Clarkson has taken the game to a different place again, and Fremantle have not gone with it. And they don't have to be like West Coast, who are a kicking team and a ball use team. They do not have to be like Hawthorn were, an exquisite kicking team who basically spread the pressure out and then kick through it. They don't have to be like that. They can be like Richmond, a surge team, but it has to be applied with skill. The number of times in the Western Derby 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, I saw West Coast turn half chances into scores and Fremantle turn absolute gimme chances into nothing, I think that is soul-destroying for Fremantle supporters.
Well, we made that point earlier with West Coast v Melbourne,
yep,
in that they didn't require as many repeat efforts to score. You raised a point in your wash-up in the West Australian, which astounds me when you think about it, that they were not good enough to have a chain of possessions over three quarters to score one goal.
That is the most staggering thing,
I
think.
That is absolutely staggering. Even at Auskick level, Duff. You'll manufacture one somehow. No, I'm dead serious. No, that's fair income. I mean, how can you not have a chain of possessions over three quarters to kick one goal?
Yep, that is mind-bogglingly bad. That's 90 minutes of football.
Yep.
And you've got a team that you're playing against that is absolutely on the attack. So at some point, Geelong is going to miss a target. All their players are going to be in offensive positions, and you are in a position to counter-attack and score just by executing a number of skills back-to-back.
Yep.
And no group of Fremantle players over 90 minutes of football were able to execute that chain of possession. That is damning.
And so they have to wear that now. This game will live with them. It will live with them, this game. But you can use it as a line in the sand, if you like, as you're saying, and change things. There has to be a revolution in their football, the way they approach it.
Yeah, and there has to be changes in personnel within their football department too.
Well, I think that's been...
So if you're not changing the senior coach, and they won't be...
Well, that's been expedited now. I mean, there have been changes.
For at least 12 months,
yep.
There won't be a change. I think it's a massive year, 2019, for Ross Lyon. I think if we are sitting here next year talking about the same sort of losses that we're sitting here talking about now, Ross Lyon will not be coaching Fremantle. And I'll go further, Ross Lyon will not be coaching any AFL team. I think Ross Lyon faces a career-defining 12 months.
Well, this week's important too, Duff. This is the final week, and memberships are hard to sell in a pre-season on the back of if you go out in straight sets like that. If there's not a massive, massive, you'd expect there to be at home anyway.
Yeah.
But and on the back of some stinging criticism, and humiliation. This is a really important game for Freo. You could almost argue it's one of the most important games for them in their history because they need to build something from where they are now, which is right now, it's ground zero.
They need to get... Well, it's not ground zero because I agree with Nathan Fyfe that this is not the worst hole they've been. I mean, I've been a Fremantle supporter since 1995. I have seen...
So what was a bigger hole?
2001 with the club $8 million in debt winning...
Yeah, that's a decent hole.
Winning their second game, I think it was round 22.
Yep.
They won their second game. And some of the losses that year were absolutely horrendous.
But Fife obviously wasn't around for that game. But
no. I'd also like to make a point. I did the numbers on Nathan Fyfe's career versus Luke Shuey's career.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a solid argument to say Luke Shuey is West Coast's best midfielder. Nathan Fyfe is Fremantle's best midfielder. They came into the AFL at pretty much the same time. Shuey actually arrived a year earlier, but he had injury issues in his early time at West Coast, and so he didn't really start playing until 2010. Fyfe started playing 2010.
Yep.
Shuey has a win-loss of 62% over his career. Fyfe has a win-loss of 57% over his career. They've both played in 11 finals, they've both played in 2 preliminary finals, and they've both played in 1 grand final. Now, Luke Shuey will add to that finals tally this year, clearly, unless he gets injured this week. But the point I want to make to Fremantle supporters without memories is that, you know, when questions get asked about, you know, to Nathan Fyfe, like they were yesterday, do you think you'll ever see success in your time at Freo? Nathan Fyfe has already been part of a successful group at Fremantle, and it's amazing to me the perception that over the last 9 years, Fremantle are a failed club and West Coast are a successful club, when really the records are remarkably similar over that period of time.
I guess.
Now, West Coast may change that this year.
Yeah.
And they may go ahead and win.
Well, there's an argument to say they already have changed that this year because they're in the finals. And they're right now where they sit, their top two. They've come and they've come again. Freo have come, but they're yet to come again.
Exactly.
But
that just means the clubs are on a different time clock.
Yeah.
But I do wonder how far they can progress this rebuild unless they address, I think it is the absolute standout symptom of their failure, and that is their skill.
Fans are pretty patient, Duff, and they'll tolerate defeat, but they'll tolerate as long as there's progression. And as we pointed out with the glass half full, there's been some progression this year, but they won't tolerate that sort of performance from the weekend. And they certainly won't tolerate it if there's another one coughed up this week.
And I think the other thing that Steve Rosich pointed out to me yesterday, and something they will be reviewing is the club's injury track record this year. So,
but every club has had those.
I think when you're playing a group of senior players and you rise and fall with those senior players, and those senior players have spent significant time on the pine or in the grandstand, you know, 5 for 6 weeks. I think Stephen Hills for about 8 weeks. Brad Hills for about 10 or 11 weeks. Matt Taberner, who's structurally important, he's missed 13 with a foot problem. That may not have been avoidable, but Stephen Hill's quad Nathan Fyfe's hamstring. I think Connor Blakely had a knee issue as well. Obviously, Sean Darcy wasn't able to play until very late in the year with a knee problem as well. So,
but if you look at that, I granted, and they're structurally important players. But if you look at GWS's list, for example, of injury list, and if you look at Collingwood's injury list, and yes, they're at different stages of development as teams, but I would argue there's a lot more, they've got greater concerns injury-wise.
I think Collingwood and GWS have been absolutely heroic.
Yeah.
I think...
Well, Buckley's probably coach of the year. There's a couple of possibilities there. He's right up there, mate.
Yeah, it's hard to argue against the coach that's two games clear.
Yeah, it is. No, I know. It is. But I just think he is a coach that's two games clear. I think he's coach of the year last year. And he's done a great job this year. But they have not had the adversity to deal with that Nathan Buckley has. And
no,
given the pressure he was under.
I agree with that. But I also think they do not have the capability to deal with adversity with the youth in their squad. I mean, this is a club that's made 22 list changes over the last 2 years. So that's half your squad.
Yep.
So the minute you have five or six senior players unavailable, you are in deep Mgwamba.
Yep.
Is the eight decided?
It is if
Geelong beat Gold Coast.
Well, clearly it is. Well, they're not losing to Gold Coast. So Geelong, the eight is decided. Certainly the structure of the eight isn't, and certainly the structure of the Hawthorn Sydney's fascinating. That's going to be a crackerjack game with a hell of a lot riding on it. Big question mark over Buddy Franklin. He looked pretty sore to me.
So that's a groin.
Frawley probably won't play for Hawthorn either. So that's.
You're not saying that James Frawley.
No, I'm not.
Out Buddy Franklin.
No, I'm not. I'm not saying
he's. I'm glad
he is.
You're not saying that.
Duff. Duff, trust me. I'm not saying that. Chip's okay. But he's no superstar. So that's a big. I think it's going to be a great final round. The little bit of the Schadenfreude in me is disappointed Melbourne won. Because as joyous an occasion...
You wanted to see them play GWS for a spot in the eight, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
You wanted it at the MCG.
And I wanted it with a minute to go, 3 points down. I wanted someone to take a mark out.
And you wanted an ISO cam on Belvedere and Montague in the grandstands,
I did.
You?
Yes, I did. There'd be the tweed jackets twirling above their head post-siren. Oh, dear. The pipes ablaze.
There'd be pipes thrown onto the field.
Oh, yeah. Well done, number four. Well done. So that's Schadenfreude in me, but well done, Melbourne. I think GWS, gallant. The Pies, you would think, get the job done over here. There's a lot riding on that. And West Coast, that's a difficult assignment for West Coast. So what a fantastic final round we've got.
Are the two Adelaide teams the two most disappointing teams in the competition?
I'm going to throw, it depends how you value Essendon and it depends how you value St Kilda.
Haven't Essendon had a run of form? Like Essendon left their run too late.
But you know what? But what happened at the start, Duff? You can say that, but it's a full season. You don't just go to sleep for the first 6-7 weeks. I'm not sure. Essendon, to me, have been disappointing. I think they should have played finals. St Kilda are probably, for me, the most disappointing of the lot. But, yeah, Port Adelaide. I think Adelaide have probably got more. Both of them have had injuries, to use as an excuse. I'm really concerned about Port's last 4 or 5 weeks of just getting smashed in contested possession. Mm. I'm worried about them being able to convert from... there just doesn't seem to be much connection at all between the mids and the forwards at all at Port. I'm really worried about where they're going, and there's a lot of noise coming out of there. Is Ken Hankley the man for the job? Well, David Koch says he is.
David Koch has re-endorsed him.
So therefore you would suggest he'll be there. It's not been a year where they've taken a step forward at all. They've probably taken a step sideways, if anything.
And they loaded up, didn't they?
Yeah.
It was, Motlop, Watts, and Rockliffe.
Time will tell whether they were correct. I mean...
Well, right now, they've all had disappointing seasons.
Well, you've got to say that they have not been good trades. They have not been good ins for Port Adelaide. I'll be glad to stand here corrected. But right now, they haven't taken them to that next level that they'd hoped they would. Adelaide, I think we can use They were blighted by injuries, but they were also blighted by just a horrendous decision pre-season, a decision to have a training camp that split the club and reverberates right now to this day. So they need to erase the season and just start afresh and remember what got them to the grand final last year, because they had a great year and they were a resilient group that had gone through a lot together. They got to a grand final and had their pants pulled down on grand final day by a great performance by a team in awesome form. It's not the end of the world. It seems like it on the day, but I think Adelaide for me is a team to watch next year. I think they'll be okay. Port Adelaide, I'm just not sure where I'm at with them right now. I don't know what they're going to do next year. I wouldn't be picking them in the eight.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that when you have, Port Adelaide now have missed the eight 3 out of the last 4 years. So what that probably tells you is that the year they made the eight may be the anomaly, not the years they missed the eight. And that's a concern. I remember thinking in those Fremantle years between 2002 and 2007, we always thought that Fremantle would come and come hard at some point. And in 2006, they played in a preliminary final. But it turned out that 2006 was the anomaly, not the other seasons. The other seasons, they were mid-table. I think they made the eight in 2003, but just missed in 04, 05, and 07.
Do you reckon Ports are tracking along?
I get the feeling that they remind me a lot of Fremantle in those years. Yes, they have some star quality, but I think they have some style issues. You've talked about the connection between
their mids. They've got star quality in Robbie Gray and Paddy Ryder, and he's a star, Gray. Ryder has just been, he's just been banged up, and that concerns me. The players below that, who I rate highly, Ollie Wines, Chad Wingard. I'm not sure what we've got from them the last second half of the year. It's been a bit of a bit of beige for me. They haven't been. There's been something missing.
Yeah, I give Wines an out. I think Wines is. I'm very harsh on Wingard.
His goals have dropped right away.
I think he makes mistakes during games, and I think he doesn't take enough care with the ball. Like, I think it was a pretty haphazard kick from Chad Wingard that actually led to Charlie Dixon's injury. He just blasts it forward, doesn't make good connection. Charlie Dixon has to make up 10 metres he didn't think he was going to have to make up to get to the contest. Stretches, lands awkwardly, bang, broken ankle, gone for the year.
You know what worried me about Port last weekend, and it probably encapsulates what we're talking about, and I know because my syndicate was on this. I had Collingwood, quarter time, half time, three quarter time, and Port to win. And they were right in the frame. They were a couple of goals down, lost by 51, and it had a hell of a lot to play for.
Yeah.
That's toes turning up type of stuff.
Yeah.
So the concerning signs there.
Before we go, the crowds at the Sydney Derby and the Q Clash. So I thought it was a good crowd at the Sydney Derby, yes. 21,000 out at Spotless Stadium.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Result, I think.
Great
Good game.
Cracking game. I was really
cracking game at Metricon as well.
It was
11,000 there, Glenn.
Yeah. Yep. And I want to sort of isolate an incident too. I don't like it. I do like one-on-one battles, and we all like the Tuke Miller Zorko battles. They're great. But can't you? The siren goes, boys. Just leave it out there. The siren goes. You can. There are people watching. Show some leadership and just leave it on the field.
I think there's a backstory.
I know there's a backstory. So what?
Yeah.
So what if there's a backstory? Continue your backstory while the game is on.
Well, I think in fairness, Zorko was the agitator after the siren went, but I think Zorko was the victim in the backstory, and it's not a backstory that should be aired.
But
I think that sometimes some emotions and some things are a little bit hard to just leave on the field when the siren goes.
Yeah,
and I think some of the things that were said went too far, and I think I'm almost going too far in saying that.
No, you're not. Just don't go any further.
Okay. Didn't like the crowd, though. I think that the AFL needs to get the time slot right in Queensland. So my mate in Queensland says Saturday afternoon is the right time slot.
Yep.
The public transport arrangements between Metricon and Brisbane and vice versa aren't great.
Yep.
And so if a Brisbane fan is going to a Gold Coast home derby and taking their kids – they've almost committing themselves to get home at midnight if they take.
It's not that easy to get to Metricon, is it? I mean,
no, it's out in the middle of nowhere.
It's as far as the crow flies from Gold Coast Strip. It's not that far.
Yeah.
But to actually get there, it's a bit of a pain in the butt. A bit like Waverley used to be.
Yeah.
In Melbourne.
Correct.
Just a bit of a pain in the butt. So if you're 50-50 about going to the footy, and I'd suggest on the Gold Coast it'd be more like 10-90.
Yeah.
Then you're just going to give yourself an out every time. So they need to get that right. Make it easy to get there.
Saturday afternoon. That's the time slot for the Q Clash. Get 30,000 at the Gabba, get 25,000 at Metricon, turn it into a marquee game that will help the Queensland teams retain players, help it to be a game that players want to be involved in.
And speaking of time slot stuff, if the Eagles do get up this week, great possibility that it'll be a Thursday Optus Stadium opener, first week of the finals.
Yeah, finals are final, mate. I don't care when they
it's played. I love my Thursday night footy, though. I love it. Love it.
Well, whenever it is, I know I'll be there. So that's the main thing. Thank you very much for joining us today. We'll be back on Thursday. We'll be tipping on round 23 and looking towards the finals. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope your team did well. And we will talk to you again on Thursday.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.